Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Great leadership requires decisiveness, authority, conviction, compassion, and most important, the ability to set the right example. It would seem easy, but it takes a lifetime of trying to put it into practice. In his book, Lead by Example, recognized leadership guru John Baldoni reveals the traits and abilities leaders need to know to inspire others to follow them. John's leadership writings have appeared in businessweek.com, fastcompany.com, and Harvard Business Publishing. He has been featured or quoted in many publications, including the New York Times, USA Today, the Chicago Tribune, and Investor's Business Daily. John, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
John, why did you write Lead by Example?
This book really began with a very simple premise. How do you get others to follow your lead? You know, leaders accomplish very little by themselves. They need the trust of others to achieve results. And Lead by Example shows how.
Why should people care to follow a leader?
The challenge is to get people to put aside their own interests in order to follow the leader. Harry Truman once said, "I learned a great leader is a man who has the ability to get other people to do what they don't want to do and like it." And therein lies that leadership challenge. So what does a leader do to get people to follow the lead and like following that lead? Lead by Example provides them tips on how to do that.
How important is self-awareness in leadership?
Self-awareness is absolutely critical. It's that sense of perspective on self. And the perspective says, what do I do well? What do I need help in? I don't think you can be an effective leader without being self-aware. Why is that? Knowing what you do well in gives you the edge to do what you do best. Knowing what you need help in allows you to bring in other people, other perspectives. I quote an example a lot of a CEO of a financial services company who said his core strength was not being an accountant or being a comptroller, but he had a good CFO with him. But this gentleman was a very talented and very good CEO. He hired where he needed help. So knowing what you stand for and what you can do is self-awareness. Leaders get in trouble when they try to stretch themselves into areas beyond their depth. Self-awareness is that sort of, I can do this, I know where I stand, or I know where I need to reach out for help.
Because nobody's good at everything. Tell us about the myth of hierarchy.
It's a corporate model that a CEO gives an order, and it's automatically carried out through every division or every group in the entity. The reality is, having worked with CEOs and senior people in the C-suite level for many, many years, I see that those initiatives really go through about one or two layers, and then they kind of fall down. A former chairman of Ford Motor Company, Alex Trotman, called that the layers of clay. So the idea that a leader can give an order and it will be executed, in some ways, is a myth. As a leader, you need to recognize that. So if this is an important initiative, if this is really important for our organization to achieve it, what do I need to do to make sure everyone gets on board?
And the myth part of that is the assumption that they'll just unquestionably follow the order.
Absolutely.
So it's important for them to realize the larger picture, why they're doing the order. There's a purpose to this task they're being asked to perform.
Right, and it's up to the leader to sell that for them, to show the urgency of the moment, why we need to do whatever it is. And this is why change initiatives so often fail. I think 3/4 of all change initiatives within a corporate environment fail, because senior leaders live under this myth of hierarchy where they say, I'll just say it and it will be done. Well, this is not the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire probably didn't exist like that either. You have to stay engaged in the process. You have to find out what's going on. But most importantly, you have to create that buy-in. And how do leaders create that buy-in? They set the right example. That's the challenge.
Tell us about persuading the unpersuaded. What's involved in that?
It's how can I bring people who are diametrically opposed to me over to my point of view? Ideas for this came from Sun Tzu, who is a legendary Chinese general. He was a master at observing the enemy and discovering strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes you attack where your opponent is vulnerable, but other times you go right at his core strength. For example, you would use a competitor's size as a disadvantage. Take the example of Starbucks. Starbucks is a very successful coffee chain, of course, but a byproduct of that is many local coffee shops have prospered in the wake or being very close to Starbucks. Why? Starbucks has a standardized brand and it brings people in. But the local coffee shop, they have a unique niche. So what they're doing is they know their own local market better than Starbucks knows it, so they cater to their locale. So they're going after Starbucks' core strength, which is their size and uniformity, and they turn that against them and they excel. But persuading the unpersuaded is how you bring people together for common ground.
What does it mean to be there for your team?
It's be seen, be heard, and be there for your people, especially now as we're dealing with such tough, tough times. And for many of our folks, anyone under, say, 35, this downturn may be unprecedented. The last place the CEO, any senior leader, or any functional leader needs to be is behind closed doors in his office. That creates unease, even a sense of panic. Rumors proliferate. The CEO, the leader, needs to be out front so people can see him, talk to him. How do you do that? You eat in the cafeteria. You're seen in the break room. You go to corporate events. You're just there. And it's not simply being there, but you're there in a sense of being engaged with people. You connect to them and take questions. Be aware that the questions you're going to get are probably the same questions you may hear 10, 20 times, but it's unique to that individual. You need to respond to him or her. You need to give your time. And there's no expectation that you have to know all the answers or give all the answers because we're living in a time of uncertainty, but simply your presence, being there with another individual and giving of your time, listening to that individual, and also soliciting his or her ideas, that's a terrific way of demonstrating presence. And you really create a sense of unity and a sense of cohesion inside the organization. That's how followership is fostered, by being there, being present, and engaged with your employees.
In your book, you tell a story about Sitting Bull diffusing tension. Can you share that with us?
Sitting Bull, unlike many Native American leaders of his time, had a unique ability to reach out and bring other tribes to him, particularly when they were fighting the Bluecoats in the Great Plains Wars of the late 1870s. There was a time when he had a large mass of forces around him, and they encountered the Bluecoats. What Sitting Bull did was he walked up into what we would call the neutral ground and simply sat down facing the Bluecoats, probably within rifle range, but within the distant rifle range, sat down, calmly put tobacco into his pipe, and smoked it. The bullets were whizzing around him, but he turned around and just acted calm as day and called fellow tribesmen, "Would anyone like to come up and have a smoke with me?" A couple of braves sat down with him. So by demonstrating that sense of bravery in the face of conflict, he was taking away the tension of the moment. And while I wouldn't ever advocate that any leader, A, smoke, or B, put himself in physical fire, within that culture, within that moment, that was a great example of demonstrating bravery, but most of all, diffusing the tension of the moment and inspiring his followers to do what he had asked them.
Right.
It wasn't that Sitting Bull was simply showing off in front of the Bluecoats. His whole life was one of sacrifice for his tribe.
Absolutely. What role does resilience play in leadership?
Resilience is absolutely critical. You know, there's no shame in being knocked down. And I came across a quote from Warren Bennis who had said that he did not know of any senior leader in any position who had not been knocked down or had not experienced some searing moment of crisis, but that individual persevered, came through it. So often, we are intimidated by failure or being knocked down. There's no shame in being knocked down. The shame comes in rolling over and playing dead. You must rise up and go forward. That doesn't mean you have to do the exact same thing, of course. Learn from what tripped you up and find new ways of doing it.
John, given the current quickly evolving economic situation that we're in right now, if you had the chance to go back and write an additional chapter or update your book, what might you stress or pay attention to in that piece of work?
I don't know that I would change a great deal, except perhaps a foreword. And the reason I say that is because I promote this book as a methodology for leading in tough times. What does that mean? in tough times as well as in good, you got to set the right example. You got to handle the tough stuff for your team. And you have to put the team first. Those universals apply in good times and in bad, probably more critically in tough times. So in that sense of visibility, you got to be out front for your people. They have to see you sweat. They have to see you working with them. At the same time, you can't be so much in the fray that you're overconsumed by it. There's a story I like to tell that if anyone has ever seen a five-alarm fire and you notice what's going on, who's the calmest person on the site? It's typically the battalion chief. If you walked up to that person, you'd see him calmly maybe sipping a cup of coffee, talking in a low tone to his lieutenants, getting input, making decisions. He looks like this is a walk in the park for him. He is radiating composure. He has it together. That's what leaders need to do, and I do speak about that in my book. Composure is very critical. While people want to see you sweat the details, they don't want to see you in a sense of panic. They don't want to see you overly worried. They want to see you taking action to make things better. Everything you do may not work, but they want to see you act. They want to see you in control of yourself as well as the situation.
Our guest on the program today has been John Baldoni, author of the book Lead by Example. John, thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Just remember, we really need your feedback. So please drop us an email at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That number again is 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers. And you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.